night I had the strangest dream I never dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to pull an end to war.
Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. With sadness and admiration, we pay tribute in this edition of Radio Curious to the life and times of Pete Seeger, America's foremost folk singer and troubadour. Pete Seeger brought songs of hope, justice, and equality wherever he went with his five-string banjo, six-string guitar, and halil, a simple handmade bamboo flute. Pete Seeger died on January 27, 2014, at the age of 94. Seeger chronicled the history of activism in the United States through his music, from the beginnings of World War II through the civil rights era of the 1950s and 60s, the anti-war movement of the 60s and 70s, to the Iraq-Afghanistan wars of today. Pete Seeger was also a personal inspiration to me when I first learned to play the five-string banjo and took lessons from him at the Idyllwild School of Music and Art in Idyllwild, California, in what seems long ago and at the same time just yesterday, in 1959. This interview with Pete Seeger was recorded in January 1992. We began our conversation when I asked him to describe what he meant when he said, "The world is at an age of uncertainty."
Well, I guess is around the world there are people firmly certain that they knew how to interpret the invented world and what things were going to happen. And whether they were religious people or conservative people or radical, depending on how you define those terms, maybe all three. Why, right now they're a little uncertain. I know I'm looking forward to trying to check with other people what to make of the next few years. The collapse of the Viet system and the communist system, they call it communist system, hanging on in China. I'm a very big fan of the Cuban people, and I think they ought to be allowed to make their own mistakes and not be invaded by us or anybody else. I'd like to see trade established. I think it'd be good for them and good for us. But that's all politics. I've made a living as a musician, and lots of times people say, "What's political about this?" And I say, "Well, I hope you'll pat your feet."
Well, there's certainly a blend between music and politics. I know that you've sung about many different aspects of that. How do you see the blend?
In a largest sense, I think everything is politics. Even somebody who says, "I never vote, I have nothing to do with politics," that's a very political statement. And somebody who came into your community and tried to persuade people not to vote would be doing something very political. In a sense, every time you're affecting the body politic, whether it's you're having a gang of people watching a football game or a lot of other people watching a comedy on television, you're, in a sense, in politics in some kind of oblique way, even though you're not talking about voting. So I don't draw a sharp line between one thing and another. It's a convenient journalistic thing to say this is sports and this is art and this is politics and this is finance. But face it, in real life, these things are all tangled up.
I know that you have a message on your banjo that maybe you could tell us about what it says and why you chose to put it there, the story behind it.
Well, Woody Guthrie went through World War II with a sign on his guitar: "This machine kills fascists." And he really wanted his guitar to be part of the worldwide struggle to defeat militarism in Japan, Germany, and Italy, which had taken over those countries. I guess you know the first people that a fascist conquers are the people of his own country. And Mussolini conquered Italy and then went on to try and take over Ethiopia and so on. And Hitler conquered Germany and Tojo and his gang conquered Japan. My father-in-law was Japanese and he knew people who were killed by the Japanese fascists.
What was your role? What were you doing during that period of time?
I was drafted and I served 3.5 years. Can't say I did any fighting. I was first trained to be an aircraft mechanic, and then later on I was in the special service and played the banjo in the rest of the war. I was in charge of hospital entertainment on the little island of Saipan in the Western Pacific.
Well, songs make up and mold social comment and social and political change. What kind of role did you see the music that you brought to the little hospital have in the social or the political or the healing change during that time?
Can't say it very much except to give a little distraction and hope, perhaps, to some of the guys who are in bandages. I remember playing the banjo once, playing an old hoedown, and seeing a fellow's toes wiggle out from under. It was the only part of his body I could see. The rest of his body was all wrapped up in bandages, but his toe was out, and I could see his toe wiggling in rhythm to my banjo.
Let's step back about 100 years before you were playing your banjo in Saipan and talk about the beginnings of the integration movement and the beginning of the abolition movement. But first, I want to play a little cut from a song we all know well, Follow the Drinking Gourd.
Well, the riverbank will make a mighty good road. The dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, big foot, traveling on. Follow the drinking gourd.
Pete, the songs of social change and the integration movement in the United States made an important role, and you played an important role in that. I'd like to know what your thoughts are now that it's well on its way with a long way to go.
Too long a story to tell in a few words, except to say that I feel I'm simply one in a long chain. I learned from people like Woody Guthrie and or him, Joe Hill. My father was a musicologist, and in the depths of depression, trying to figure ways in which music could help the American people pull themselves together. And I've never been a theoretician so much as my father was. I've simply passed on some of the things I learned from him, namely that music, like any other art, is not something unto itself, but serves to achieve larger ends, individually and in society. And so when I sing somewhere, whether it's a school for small kids or in an old folks' home or wherever, I'm trying to sing songs that will somehow help them understand the world and get ahead.
Maybe I could ask you to talk for a moment about the civil rights struggle in the 60s, or actually beginning in 1956 with the song If You Miss Me from the Back of the Bus, and your role in working in the South and your role in creating the idea that we shall overcome.
Well, I went down south way back in the 40s and 50s and was scratching my head like a lot of other people, white and black, saying, what can be done to end this screwy system of segregation, Jim Crow, they used to call it. And I learned songs that had been made up years ago by black people. I Follow the Drinking Gourd was one of them. And I'd learned songs made up by white people about situations. Long come the 1950s, I was, I guess, the first person who ever sang the song We Shall Overcome to Martin Luther King, 1957. And a friend of mine drove him to a speaking engagement the next night. She remembers him sitting in the back seat of the car saying, "We shall overcome." That song really sticks, doesn't it? He wasn't a song leader, though. The song didn't catch on then. It was 3 years later when a Guy Carawan, who learned the song from me, brought it to about 70 young people, and they said, "Oh, Guy, you got a great song, but you don't have the rhythm right." I said, "Well, that's how I learned it from Pete Seeger." He said, "Well, we'll show you how the rhythm should be," and they gave it the Motown beat, and that's the way the song spread.
And then the songs were made up on the spot. If You Miss Me from the Back of the Bus, or If You Miss Me from the Cotton Field, You'll Find Me at the Voting Booth. And the people were making songs to create and foment political and social change of the time.
You might consider this, while all around the world people make up songs, there's an especially strong tradition in Africa of improvising new words or new variations musically on old songs. Whether it's a hymn or a blues or whatever it is, you'll find African Americans carrying on an ancient tradition of improvising. I'm not the only person who's noted this. Wyatt T. Walker's written several very good books, and the song We Shall Overcome is the result of many different people improvising over the years. The original of the song was a rather wordy hymn written by Reverend Tindley, a black preacher in Philadelphia in 1903. "I'll overcome someday, I'll overcome someday. If in my heart I do not yield, I'll overcome someday." Well, who knows who changed it? Nobody knows, but over 40 years or so, it got changed, and now it's a worldwide song. In a way, I'm glad to see it's still changing a little bit. People keep adding new verses. I was in, where the heck was I? In Madison, Wisconsin a while back, and there were four young black women who sang in a quartet in church, and they'd made up what amounted, sound to me, like a rap version of We Shall Overcome. "We shall overcome, we shall overcome. Today, today," they said.
In the folk process and the evolution of music, it seems that in an article in Crossroads magazine, you're quoted as saying that you like to use the word folk music as little as possible. Could you tell us why and some of the background on that decision?
Well, there's a tendency in journalism oversimplify things, and it's good to strive for simplicity, but it's even better to learn to mistrust it. And the word folk music, like many other journalistic words, has gotten so changed that it's almost unusable. 100 years ago, of course, it meant the music of the peasant class, ancient and anonymous. Then along came the Lomax family and collected cowboy songs and lumberjack songs and said, "These are folk songs too." Then along comes Woody Guthrie, and they tell him, "Hey, you're a folk singer." And they tell me I'm a folk singer, and I was stupid enough to take their word for it. So now anybody with a guitar is a folk singer. What I'm sorry about is that if you're not on stage with a microphone in front of you, they think you're not a real folk singer. If you're someone grandparent simply singing an old song for your grandchild, rocking them to sleep, you're not a folk singer because you're not on stage with a microphone in front of you. Well, this is shit for the birds, but I think the best thing you can do about it is laugh about it and use the word folk music as little as possible.
You're listening to an archive edition of Radio Curious, recorded in January 1992, with folk singing banjo player Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger died on January 27th, 2014, at the age of 94 years. I'm Barry Vogel.
Pete, in terms of making up songs that comment on social issues, let's talk for a moment about the struggle for equal rights for women.
What is equal? What are women? What is struggle?
I guess that provides a lot of questions that could be answered in many different ways.
Yeah, we only got a half an hour. In fact, we only got 15, 20 minutes left.
This is true.
We'll say right off, but like a lot of men, I got a big education in the 1970s, and I was fortunate to have a family that kept after me until I showed I was learning something.
Perhaps we could...
Wife and sisters. My younger sister, Peggy, you know, wrote the song, "I'm Gonna Be an Engineer." I've sung it all over the place.
Perhaps we could move along to anti-war songs. There's a wonderful one, "I Come and Stand at Every Door."
I come and stand at every door, but none can hear my silent tread. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I'm only 7, although I died in Hiroshima long ago. I'm 7 now as I was then. Children die, they do not grow.
What role do songs against war play in raising the people's consciousness about war and the problems of war?
Well, for thousands of years, songs have been used to get men to go to war. And my guess is, from time to time, people, perhaps often women, have had songs yearning for peace. And sometimes they've even had effect. I was tremendously impressed, very frankly, at the use of songs not only during the Vietnam War here, but just to that, in France, they had songs against the French war in Algeria. And I'd been singing peace songs for many years, but in the Vietnam War, we really saw them take effect. And some of the songs were so simple, it was ridiculous. The little song I sang before 250,000 people in Washington, D.C. in November 1969, I just repeated it over and over and over for about 8 minutes. All we are saying is give peace a chance. We had that whole 250,000 people singing that over and over. I'd shout out between the lines, "Are you listening, Nixon? All we are saying, you better listen, Agnew, is give peace a chance." Like a gigantic ballet, Peter, Paul, and Mary jumped on stage to sing with me and Brother Kirkpatrick, and then on the other side of us, Mitch Miller stood up and started waving his arms and getting everybody singing in time. It was great.
Well, songs of political change often instill fear in people. And I know that about 35 years ago, you were a victim of political fear when you were cited by the House of Representatives for contempt of Congress in 1956. I know that after the trial, or actually during the trial, you wanted to sing one of those songs to the judge. Could you comment on that in retrospect? And then I do want to play the song for our listeners.
Well, it's a good song, and I asked the judge if I could sing it. He says, "You may not." Bang went his gavel. He said, "Bailiff, take him away." And they took me down to a jail cell. I only stayed there 4 hours, though, and my lawyer got bail for me. And a year later, the appeals court acquitted me. It was a silly committee. Glad it's no longer a part of Congress. The House Committee on Un-American Activities. I guess Americanism, like art, is in the eye of the beholder.
Let's hear "Wasn't That a Time."
Our fathers bled at Valley Forge. The snow was red with blood. Their faith was warm at Valley Forge. Their faith was brotherhood.
Wasn't that a time? A time to try the soul of man. Wasn't that a terrible time?
Brave men who died at Gettysburg now lie in soldiers' graves, but there they stem the slavery tide, and there the faith was saved.
Wasn't that a time?
Out.
We have no fear. We dare to reach our hand to other neighbors, far and near, to friends in every land. Isn't this a time? Isn't this a time? A time to free the soul of man. Isn't this a wonderful time? Wonderful time.
Pete, I understand that on your banjo now you have a sign or the words, "This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender." Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it is a little different from what Woody had on his guitar 50 years ago. I put the thing on my banjo when he went in the hospital. And I really believe that what we got to do is persuade the human race that we got to settle our arguments peaceably. It's not going to be easy. It certainly isn't easy. Who knows what the future is going to be? Let's keep our sense of humor and argue about it. Right now, with the tremendous dangers in the world that we'll wipe ourselves off the map by some foolish technology, some foolish militarism, I'm all in favor of arguing, even though words are slippery things and mean different things to other different people. Occasionally, I can see myself getting involved in something violent. I once sang for some students in a big southern university, Duke University. A king had just been assassinated, and about 1,000 white college students were sitting down demanding that Duke give more scholarships to black students, and the president, they said, should resign from his white-only country club. And he should bargain in good faith with the maintenance workers, most of them black. I said, you guys sitting out here in the courtyard, you 1,000 people are endangering your college careers. This is the first time this has ever happened at Duke. Congratulations. Why haven't I heard about it? Oh, they said, we called up NBC and CBS, but they said they couldn't spare any cameramen to send anybody down. They said, oh, let us know if there's any violence. We'll send somebody down. Boy, I felt the blood rushing to my head. This is how our country is misgoverned. They're not going to cover a story unless there's violence. It was a great thing they were doing, but it was not going to be covered because no one was breaking any windows. Well, I picked up a big stone from the gravel, and still carry a stone in the banjo case. I don't intend to throw a stone at a person. I've had stones thrown at me. It's no fun. But if I find out they're not going to cover a story simply because there's no violence, I might break a window someplace. I don't know.
Pete, I know that you don't call yourself a folk singer, as you've told us, but in Sing Out magazine, in volume 4, number 6, in the May 1954 edition, Alan Lomax is called Pete Seeger America's greatest folk singer. History will endorse this judgment.
Oh, don't pay any attention to people like Lomax.
Pete Seeger, thank you very much.
My life flows on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. I hear the real, though far off, hymn that hails a new creation.
This interview with folk singer and troubadour Pete Seeger was recorded in January of 1992. Pete Seeger died on January 27th, 2014, at the age of 94 years. And this interview was recorded before I asked my guests to recommend a book. I would like to recommend 3 books now in honor of our friend Pete Seeger. One is Pete Seeger, The Storm King, Stories, Narratives, Poems, Spoken Word Set to a World of Music, by Pete Seeger and Jeff Haynes, published in April of 2013. Another is Pete Seeger in His Own Words, by Pete Seeger and Rob Rosenthal, published in June of 2012. And my personal favorite, How to Play the 5-String Banjo, by Pete Seeger, republished in January of 1992, published many years earlier. There are over 500 archive editions of Radio Curious on our website, www.radiocurious.org, where they're free for you to stream, download, enjoy, and share. We appreciate your curiosity, ideas, comments, and questions. You may reach us by email. Our address is curious@radiocurious.org. or snail mail, 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482, or by phone, 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. Christina Onnestad is our associate producer, and I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.